Do you not drink, or are you not drinking because you have a show tonight?
Kind of both, actually. Mm-hmm. I've been just, it's a number of things. It's a stomach thing. And I just don't feel good anymore when I drink. So it's.
Oh, man.
It's just. I don't feel good ever. But I guess I'm always drinking. So, hey, maybe there's something to that.
But yes, I don't. It's a personal rule that I don't drink anything. Like, I'll have like a drink before a show, but I don't have more than one drink before I perform.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what happens when burlesque dancers have more than one drink and then try to dance, and then I'm terrified for them.
What happens?
Oh, gosh. It hasn't happened a lot, but sometimes I've heard of performers who've gotten like more nude than they were supposed to be in a venue that doesn't allow full nudity.
Right.
I've seen other performers that were hosting that the show was, you know, only supposed to be an hour, and then it wound up being 2 hours because they just would not stop talking. So, yeah, I'd try, unless it's like I've gotten really, I have had drinks like with a purpose to get buzzed before a show only once, but it was because I got dumped like 3 hours before showtime.
Okay. Yeah,
it's brutal.
So I'm not gonna get sloshed. I'm just gonna have enough to where I don't cry while I'm on there.
Yeah,
I feel like doing burlesque immediately following being dumped, even if you already do burlesque, is kind of like the best. Like, well, fuck you anyway.
Yeah.
Every time I meet a performing artist, or like every time I offer a performing artist a drink and they refuse, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what you should do to not become a degenerate alcoholic. Like, that's the trick.
It's so hard to be a non-drinker in New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
You're one of those people that I think I know from online, but we've actually really not talked very much in person, and it's been in like crowded environments. Mm-hmm. So I did not hear your accent, but you have like a Louisiana accent. You're from what part of Louisiana?
Chalmette.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize you had an accent until today.
My people too are from the parish.
See, I mean, I can't even spot it though, really.
You can't?
It's subtle.
I mean, I'm gonna now make you feel self-conscious and like try and listen to it the whole time, but
it's not super thick, but you have a Louisiana accent.
I mean, I could switch to my customer service voice.
Ooh, I like that.
Thank you for calling No Paws, No Casters. This is Remy D. How can I help you?
Is that the voice that you do for when you dress up as Cinderella? Or no, you're Belle.
I dress up as Belle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my voice gets so high when I go, because I go to cons a lot, like Comic Con and Dragon Con and stuff.
I'm so interested in that. What is that about?
Oh, it's fun. It's my people. It's just, you know, wearing a costume and walking around and being like wearing your fandom. Because I'm obsessed with Beauty and the Beast, and I never got to dress up as Belle when I was a kid. But it's just like, you know what? I'm 30 fucking years old. I want to do it. It's my money. I'm going to dress up as a damn princess.
So just
everyone's on Molly at those things, right? Yeah, I mean, serious question. Everyone's on Molly on this?
Dragon Con does have a big drinking aspect to it, but you don't have to be drunk to have fun. It's just it's pretty overwhelming, especially if crowds are too much. But
why is it called that?
I don't know why they call it Dragon Con, but it's one of the biggest cons in the country. It's in Atlanta. It's my favorite, and it takes place, it's across 5 hotels in downtown Atlanta.
Oh wow.
And it has my favorite costumes, cosplay. So
how did you get into cosplay in the first place? Did burlesque come first, or did cosplay come first?
Well, I started cosplaying in high school.
Okay.
So, I grew up doing theater, so it kind of, when I started getting into comic books, it kind of just bled over. Like, I love these characters so much, I really want to dress up like these superheroes and these villains and Harry Potter stuff. It started at my school. My friends and I started a club at, where'd you go to high school?
Sacred Heart.
I went to Mount Carmel.
Oh, wow. What year did you graduate?
2006. Katrina hit my senior year.
I was 2007.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Wait, what was the name that... Because
I thought you were younger than me, by the way. Hate that. You look younger than me.
But I had at Mount Carmel, they had my friends and I... oh, there's a cat here. Hi.
Yep, that's Tippy.
That's Tippy. Feel free to say hello.
That's Tippy Hedren.
Come here. Come here and love me.
That's about how she responds to any affection.
Yeah, like, I'm used to it.
She attacks me and tries to stop recording on the podcast every time.
You smell my cat on my purse. Smell my little asshole.
Is that, or are those smell two my separate little things? Asshole.
Is that I realized it as I was saying it. Mount Carmel. We started a sci-fi fantasy club. Mm-hmm. And turns out there was a lot of closet nerds that were needing a space to indulge, and we would have monthly movie nights where it was encouraged to dress up, and that was the first time I started dressing up as characters from comic books and Harry Potter and the like.
What was the first thing that you dressed up as? Like in that capacity, not like Halloween or whatever.
Nightcrawler from X-Men. But the whole cosplay thing has actually kind of bled into burlesque, especially over the last couple of years, because there's typically two categories. There's classic burlesque, which is like the glove and gown, the mm-hmm. stuff they used to do in the 40s and 50s. And then there's neo-burlesque, which is all modern costumes, modern songs, remixes. And nerdlesque is kind of a subset of neo-burlesque.
And nerdlesque, so you have clips of you online doing skits as Pee-wee Herman.
Yes.
How long do you work on, including costuming and writing the actual act, each individual performance? I know it's less time if you're redoing a performance, but yeah, like the first time.
It depends because it depends on if I have to get a costume made, because I cannot sew. I'm not allowed in our sewing machines because I've broken every one that I've touched. But... like Pee-wee, I actually put Pee-wee together for a friend's birthday party. He was throwing an 80s themed birthday party, and I went to a thrift store and found the pieces that I needed. I had to go to another store for the bow tie, but once people saw me in the costume, then everybody was like, you gotta do a Pee-wee act. You have to do a Pee-wee act. So that probably took me, I mean, since I already had the costume, probably about maybe a month, maybe a little bit under a month. Wow. To mix the music and then practice, and I had to invest in a tricycle.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, did you just, like, just jack went to Toys a tricycle R- no, from a child? I went to Toys R Us
and bought a tricycle. And I needed help putting it together because, you know, it's you don't buy it fully assembled. I had no idea until I went to the store.
So when you're, I mean, I guess most of the burlesque I've seen is, like, it, like with comedy, you call it like an ambush show. Like it's a lot of people like not knowing what they're about to see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden burlesque is happening.
Yeah.
I guess like it's probably most of the shows you do aren't that, but some are. Mm-hmm. Like what's the reaction you get with like a bunch of like drunk, horny dudes at a bar who think they're about to see like probably what they think of as like pretty close to just stripping, and then all of a sudden there's someone in a tricycle like doing like
there it is. So those gigs are very few and far between. I haven't done anything like a ambush burlesque in a while because it just in my experience it hasn't gone mm-hmm. well. Like people, like nobody got out of line, everybody behaved themselves, they just I think they were uncomfortable, and I sense that when you sense that your audience is uncomfortable. Yeah, it's
we
just
don't have any
fun.
Experience doing that. Yeah, I feel like it's like ambush burlesque is less common than ambush comedy because it's a lot easier to get people out to see burlesque than it is to get people to see comedy.
Absolutely, I think that when we do comedy and burlesque shows, people are very upset that they're doing comedy and not burlesque.
Well, there's a comedy show at Siberia on Mondays mm-hmm. where it's comedy and burlesque or whatever. And the thing the thing that I like about that show is that I get to interrupt people's pleasure mm-hmm. and tell jokes for 5 minutes or like the people
about
like,
suicide.
Yeah. People turn out to see burlesque, and then I'm just like, hey, you didn't want this at all, but here's how I feel about my death.
Right. Yeah, whenever I don't know, I either do very well at that show, or more often than not, I absolutely eat shit, which is one reason that I don't go.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Chris Lane, who doesn't even listen to this show, but he's always like, he always makes fun of me for going to 12 Mile instead, and he's like, I know you need your girl power, and I'm just like, fuck you, dude, it's better to do comedy there. Yeah. They like me more.
Every time I go up, he immediately gets on stage and is like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. Yeah.
I don't know why we put that dude on blast more than anyone.
Because he'll never listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
He never will.
I mean, he's too old to listen to podcasts.
He doesn't know. Yeah, he can't get. He can't listen to it. He has a radio show that's undetectable through radio wave. Like, you can't listen to it. I love Chris Lane. He's one of my very good friends. I consider him a good friend, but I'm also like, you're such an old, stupid man.
It's funny that, because like essentially what podcasts are just radio shows that like we all got into for some reason,
right?
And yeah, the like I feel like being a DJ is cooler than being a podcaster, but
yeah,
not for Chris.
I feel like in the
future, it's definitely harder.
I feel like in the future people will cut out the middleman. Like it used to be like you were funny in a conversation and people are like, oh, you should be a comedian. Mm-hmm. But like, actually you should be a podcaster if you're funny in conversation. Right. Comedy is a whole different thing. You have to like be able to do stuff.
Yeah.
But when you're just doing a podcast, you don't need any skills.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, you basically, you're like cashing in on the fact that you had a tumultuous family life.
Right. Or you didn't.
And got really good at interrupting. No, I don't mean in terms of trauma. I just mean in terms of like being able to interrupt people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm always curious about how other things, like I know how only from wanting to do it. And I think I get annoyed when people are like,
wait, you did burlesque too, right?
No, not really. I mean, but I did it.
I mean, I feel like that has to be brought up.
Okay. Yeah.
What was your name?
Bobby Pinn.
Cute.
I did it twice. I was good friends with a lot of drag kings because they hadn't realized that they were trans men yet. And so the Crescent City Kings, one of them is actually, is not, she's not a trans man, but she's in DSA. But she, anyway, so.
That's such a funny qualifier. Not a trans man, but
anyway, in she was DSA. Like a, she's a cisgender woman who did drag king stuff. Anyway, so a lot of my friends were into drag king stuff, and I was at LSU, but like some of them were also at LSU, so we would come in during the weekends, and they would have shows that were like variety shows at either the I did it twice, once at the Bourbon Pub, once at Always Lounge, and it was like they were organizing and producing the shows, so that's the only reason I was able to be on them is that I knew them, and I did burlesque. I don't even know if you can call it that, but it was in conjunction with Drag King. And we performed to Why Don't We Do It in the Road, and he was a construction worker that was harassing me as I stripped.
That's ideologically complicated.
Yeah.
Was it just my group of friends in high school, or did everyone go through the like with that song, like just doing it because there's only like there's one line in that whole song.
Yeah.
But did everyone else do the like, why don't we do it in the butt?
Was no.
That, okay.
Not nope. That I know.
Just, no. Not me.
It just seemed so obvious and we did it.
I'm surprised that a bunch of girls at an all-girls school did not think of that. But also not a lot of girls. I mean, I still thought I was cool for liking the Beatles until I was in like 12th grade. So yeah. Anyway, but I did not really do burlesque. I don't even know if it counts as burlesque, but I was nude, and I started off with clothes on, and it was not great. But I was going to say, what's the path? Like, for comedy, the path is, you know, you do open mics, and then at least the path I know of is, like, you do open mics, people see you, they book you on shows, and then if you get really good, you move. But what's the path for burlesque?
I vividly remember my first burlesque show. It was 10 years ago. It was at Big Mama's, I think, and it was the Storyville Starlets, and I had not figured out that I'm not straight yet, but I remember being really excited about all these women taking their clothes off, and it's just basically like a giant middle finger to everybody telling us to behave ourselves, and that's just something I could really get behind. And the way that I got into it was I started out singing. I've been singing since I could talk, pretty much. My dad's a musician. And I was writing. I was an unpaid intern at Offbeat Magazine. But they paid me in tickets to stuff. And tickets to one of those things was the New Orleans Burlesque Festival. So I got to go to that for free and meet a bunch of people.
Quick interjection. Fun thing to do if there's a stack of Offbeat magazines is you can just put one on top of the other one and then it says Beat Off Magazine.
I Anyway, New Orleans Burlesque Festival.
I've never put that together. I'm going to try that.
I've literally put that together every time I've seen it. It says
Offbeat Off Magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I met a local performer who said that her troupe might need a singer in the future. So I started singing with them. And the more I watched it, because I'm not a trained dancer. So that was the whole reason I would always say, like, I could not do this because I don't know how to dance. But the more I watched it, the more like, it's not super complicated, a lot of the stuff that we do. It's more just getting, it's a lot of it is getting the musicality right. A lot of it is learning to do things and mix it up so you're not doing the same moves over and over again. But the moves themselves, like the glove peels, the stocking peels, are not terribly complicated. So the more I watched it, the more I was like, maybe I could try this. So our next show, this was when, I can't think of what it's called now because every 3 years it changes, but it used to be called Ruby Fruit Jungle in Decatur.
Oh, hell yeah.
And there were six people in the audience. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, well, if I get up there and I'm terrible, there's only six people here. So I was too nervous to go down to pasties and a thong at the time. So I just kept my bra and regular panties on. But I sang and I stripped to Criminal by Fiona Apple.
Oh, nice. It's a good one.
Because I felt like I can't dance, so I need to sing so that they're still entertained some kind of way.
Yeah.
And then slowly over the last, that was 2011, that was 8 years ago, I started going to more shows. I started taking classes. Bella Blue has a school down here. And I think the big turn was when I produced my first show. I wrote and directed a Nightmare Before Christmas burlesque show.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, that's kind of like also what helped. There was a show before mine that was a Super Mario Nerdlesque show that was also a play. And that's what inspired me to write Nightmare Before Christmas burlesque.
I mean, when you say write, you're writing routines to songs from the musical, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then writing the dialogue in between.
Okay, the dialogue in between. Got mm-hmm. it. So is it something where, and I mean, I'm coming from a perspective of someone who, you know, hates art. No, I don't hate art, but I barely like comedy, but like, are people invested in the stories, or it's like intentionally campy and silly just to sort of like keep some sort of narrative? But do you think people are like, when you're writing it, is there a plot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically for the burlesque. It's like, it's just a vehicle to glue the burlesque together.
Well, yeah, because if it wasn't for the burlesque, then it would just be a play.
Yeah, yeah.
But what kind of changed my whole world about when I saw the Super Mario show is that, so the way that play, it was by the troupe that is now called the Blue Stockings. And the way that show worked was the joke was that Mario and Luigi have been looking for the princess so long that they're hallucinating and seeing beautiful women everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So each villain in the Super Mario game, like the little the Goombas, mm-hmm. the Chain Chomp, the fish, the ghosts, they each got each burlesque act was like a different level. Until mm-hmm. they finally got to the princess.
I feel like Goombas is so close to a slur.
It does sound like an anti-Italian slur.
Yeah, definitely.
So I loved that idea. I love the idea of there being a reason for the characters to take their clothes off. Like when I wrote Nightmare, it was like the idea. It was playing on the idea that Halloween costumes every year are just getting sluttier and sluttier. I changed up the dialogue. Santa Claus was our narrator, and I made it, you know, a little more pervy, a little funnier.
Yeah.
And then after that, Xena Zeitgeist wrote Arkham Asylum, which was the Batman burlesque show. Same thing. The plot of that show is somebody's releasing gas into Arkham Asylum that's making all the inmates want to strip.
This all just sounds like stuff that like teenagers at a Spencer's Gift in a like mall in like 2004 would be like, I can't wait until we can legally do this.
We are putting fan fiction on a stage, and I'm so pleased.
I feel like the whole genre of nerdlesque should like have like a blacklight lighting to it. And there should definitely
just
be.
So you can see all the cum.
Well, like a, and like the backdrop to all of it should be like a poster of like a weed leaf, like fucking, like a like Wolverine.
Right. Well, but it all it doesn't take itself too seriously.
No, of course not.
Yeah, and it's I mean, I don't think I could. I've liked burlesque because I've been like, okay, but I gotta say, I think most of the times I've liked burlesque, it was just because I was kind of like turned on. Mm-hmm. Is that bad?
No.
Okay, that's fine.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah,
all
right. I feel like I like oscillate. There are like two ways I can enjoy burlesque, which are just like horny.
Right. Yeah,
is one. And then the other one is, well, I guess like three. So there's like the like, oh, cool. Naked, hot people, great, whatever you think that means.
Yeah.
And then there's also like, holy shit, this person is an incredible like dancer, mm-hmm. performer. Like, mm-hmm. they can do like crazy twists with their body and shit like that. Right. And then the other one is like, this is a very like charismatic person who's somehow like sort of being like self-deprecating at the same time as taking their clothes off, and that's like rare and funny, and you don't see that very often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's like, it's harsh because like stand-up comedy is like, when it's bad, it's so fucking bad.
same for burlesque
mm-hmm. Like, yeah, yeah, if you like before you're good, god, I mean, like,
but also I don't know, I mean, I think that there's some burlesque. Is there fighting in the scene? Like, y'all talk shit about the people that are like, she thinks that she's good, she's not even fucking trying.
She's trying to get booked.
It's a trap.
Like, you don't have to say who, but does that exist?
I'm choosing my words carefully. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can also cut whatever.
If you end up, yeah.
I will say, like, it's gotten
including
better.
A bitch. Uh-huh.
It's gotten way better, but there has been, there has been drama in the past and clickiness and... Mm-hmm. Judginess,
right.
People saying like you know, accusing somebody of getting booked for favoritism or what have you,
right? But or fucking someone, does that happen?
I have not yet.
Yeah, no, I understand. I've yeah.
As far, I don't, oh.
Jeff doesn't even book me for the fucking ripoff show.
go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, the thing that I've noticed, especially in the last couple of years, is that the bad burlesque or the burlesque that's not as polished is much, it's few and far between because there are so many performers now. There's no room for that shit anymore.
Yeah.
And, but also, again, same thing with comedy. The only way you're going to get better is you have to be on a stage.
Yeah, so that's the hard part is like, if you're bad, you have to be on a stage, but you can't get better if you suck, if there's a shit ton of good people who also want to be on a stage.
Exactly.
Is there burlesque open mics?
No.
Interesting.
You can't, so you just so can't you just roll up.
Yeah, you can't just roll up and be like, can I take my clothes off?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I've got duct tape on my boobies. Let's do this.
And is there sort of like, I know there's no union. It like, sorry, I'm not like putting my arm around you.
Oh,
I'll stop.
Damn it.
But there, I know that there's no like union, but is there sort of an understanding of like, we're not going to do shows for free? Because if
yes.
We, yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely, like, I know people who refuse to work together, but they'll still like be, they'll still protect each other, like from a gross producer or a gross photographer or something like that. And a big example recently, and I'm not going to name his name because apparently he's threatening people, but the awesome. There's a show, one of the shows at I'm trying, like, how am I going to tell this story?
We can bleep
without,
shit if
someone,
we need to, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He had a big show at a big venue in the French Quarter, a monthly show.
Are you just talking about the Confederate shit?
Basically, the entire cast walked out, started their own troupe, and now the rest of us refuse to work for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. And he did other shitty stuff,
wait, wait,
too,
so
right?
Little bit of context here. So, basically, they did, like, a Confederate flag
act, and he...
act.
Not and the first time we've talked about this on the podcast.
It wasn't a whole Confederate flag act, but there was a Confederate flag on the stage. And
on a performer, correct?
On a performer in a venue that has a predominantly black staff.
Right.
Oof.
And
awesome.
The girl who did it that night was actually filling in for a black performer.
Whoa, wait.
This
is so complicated.
Wait,
yeah. So it's,
she was filling in for a black performer who was going to wear that.
No.
Oh,
she was
going
to do a different act.
Oh, okay. I was like, what? Because no. I could see there being something subversive with that.
Well, Kanye tried that with his fucking clothing line, like, before he went full reactionary.
Right.
Which was like, ooh, what a warning sign.
But yeah, we all like kind of, because this is such a small, like not, it's getting bigger, but it still is kind of niche. Mm-hmm. Like, the people that I look up to, like if I walked down the street and asked somebody, like, do you know who Pearl Noir is? They're probably not going to know who she is. But to me, she's my idol.
That's how comedy is. Yeah. It's like we idolize people. Even fucking Todd Barry, like, who, you know, is a particular little man. But, like, he's famous. I can say whatever I want about Todd Barry.
Yeah.
But he's a particular little man and whatever. But, like,
I'm tightening up. I'm thrilled.
Yeah. No, but I was just saying, like, to us, he's famous. Do you know who Todd Barry is?
Not a clue.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Only comedians know who he is, and he's one of the more fucking famous comedians. Right.
When people find out you do comedy and they're like, so, what? Like, who do you like? Like,
I'm like, Dave Chappelle, fuck off. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I do say Cat Williams. Yeah. Because, like,
I do love Cat Williams.
Cat Williams is like
so
the like
fucking
only money. Like good comic that's like on that level
now. That, yeah,
there's a bunch of people who did great shit, but now they all have followings that won't check them on anything they fucking say, so they suck. And you put out like Chris Rock's last horrible special or whatever,
right?
But if I tell someone like, oh, I love Maria Nate Bamford, like Kyle Kinane, they're like, I don't know who the fuck.
Unless
that
they're
is.
Comedy nerds, in which case it's just like run away.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or unless they like ran out of stuff to watch on Netflix.
Right.
Like a lot of, I think Netflix has done something interesting to the comedy landscape in that like it's shoving stand up in people's faces in a way that hasn't been the case since the
90s. And what sucks is that so many people who have Netflix specials are so good and so many are so bad. So you can't categorically say they're doing something bad or good.
Right.
But like Nate Bergazzi.
So
he's
a Republican.
Fucking funny. He's a Republican.
It sucks so
Wait,
bad.
Wait, how do we? I know he's a Republican, but how do I know it?
I don't know. I also know it, but I don't know how I know. I know it.
But like he does apolitical clean specials.
Right.
I've heard him on podcasts talking about it.
Okay. Yeah. It sucks that he is because he's legitimately funnier than the funniest person. If there's a funniest person in the world, there's no way that they're funnier than his joke writing. Like his joke writing is so fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Sorry, Remy.
No, that's fine. But going off of what you're saying about like people with a smaller following being able to call them out on what they say, I think having a small small-ish community is it's easier for us to kind of call out and say, hey, this dude's an asshole, you really shouldn't be working for him, or don't work for free because that screws all of us over and the like. So not really a union, but it's just an understanding.
Yeah. Are there unions in other states?
Not that I'm aware of.
A whisper network. Yeah.
Yes, a whisper network.
So what, you can be as specific as or general as you want, but like, what is the role of, not performers, but just like in terms of producers, men in this landscape, and like, to what extent is it an ocean full of sharks, and to what extent is it like good faith participation?
Well, there are not as much. It's not as many men. Cis men in burlesque.
Yeah.
And they go in, the good ones at least go in with the understanding that they are guests in our space.
Right.
I've heard a lot of people put it like that. And I like that phrase because this is one space where women and LGBT folk get to just be unabashedly themselves.
Mm.
And we want to keep it as safe as possible. So the second we find out that somebody's misbehaving, they're out. or at least we try to make it that way. It's either that or they pack up and move somewhere else. Where,
yeah.
Are there any cis men who perform?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a local performer named, named Fathoms Deep who.
Oh, I've seen Fathoms Deep.
What is wrong with my throat today?
Take your time.
He actually performed at Burlesque Hall of Fame weekend in Las Vegas, which is like our Olympics, our Super Bowl, our biggest event.
Yeah, that's your just for laughs.
Yeah, is it selective? Is it very?
It's super selective. There's four. It's a weekend of four shows, and one of the shows is called the Tournament of Tees, which is the best in the world.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
And he performed opening night, which is called the Oh no, I'm gonna lose my burlesque card. The Movers, Shakers, and Innovators club show.
It's the new faces of burlesque.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Fathoms Deep does like a kind of an Eyes Wide Shut like cape. Hooded cape thing. Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen him at Siberia.
Also, a friend of the show, Kyle Smith, did burlesque.
That's true.
Yes, yeah.
I forgot about that. Mm-hmm.
I did a show with Kyle years ago. We did a burlesque play. We did a show based on it.
That's so perfect. Wait, was he it?
Well, he loves. No, he loves. He's like, Kyle is like the only dude I know who is like into like fucking twisted clown shit.
Yeah.
Like I'm like yes.
He has
absolutely.
Like a clown face tattooed on his fucking hand that he like puts on his like up to his face. He's the biggest. Yeah, that's the only thing black people have that white people don't, is being able to be into twisted clowns and not sound like a loser.
That's the only black privilege.
Yeah, that's the only privilege.
Yeah, you could have
Michael.
A,
you can cut
you could
that.
Have
if you think
a,
it's
the
racist,
Punisher
I don't think
tattoo,
it's racist. Yeah.
And everyone's like tight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I did that show with him, and I did like maybe I think two or three other shows with him. He's so talented.
Yeah,
he's so fucking talented.
He's one of these comics that's like an artist first and a comic just because he's an artist.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I agree. He also is the only comic who can do like comedic poetry. And at first, I didn't like it, but now I actually think it's funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I am the worst. It's impossible to make me like anything.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a handful of burlesque performers that also do stand-up. I've done it a few times, and I feel way more naked doing stand-up than I ever
did. That's exactly what Jaja said when she did our show, yeah.
And Zena's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've seen Zena do stand-up. Who else? Jade. Oops the Clown. Well, Jade was a stand-up. Jade, so now Jade's more into burlesque, but Jade definitely. It also, I think it makes sense that someone that was into comedy would be into burlesque and vice versa, because they're both things that like anyone can do, and they're only regulated by how good you are at it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I've said this too much on the podcast, but I'm glad that you agree, because it's like that's why I shit on comedy and I shit on burlesque, because so much of it is bad. And I think with comedy though, there's less. Since I do think now that you're talking about the fact that burlesque is like run by women, I think that that's why there's probably more quality control, because I think that like men when they want to book a diverse showcase are bad at actually picking like good people. Like I saw someone tweet the worst thing you can do for a woman is book an unfunny woman.
Because
then it shows that you don't think any women are funny.
It's a great way to communicate that you don't think women are funny. Is if you like book a token bad comic.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And like I think that there's a lot of that in comedy. There's also a shit ton of shitty white men, but I know why they're there.
How dare you?
But like I'm a few. I'm drinking the worst drink.
I'm a few malt liquors deep. Is that what you're going to say?
Malt liquors drink. Jesus, Lord in heaven.
We are 39 minutes into this recording.
Yeah, but homie. We drank before, and I had two, and y'all had one.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's our fault.
Anyway, I think it's cool that there's some sort of quality control, because it does seem like anyone who wants to do burlesque just kind of has to be like, hello, but that's just how it seems from an outsider perspective.
I mean, it is like that to a point, but you go in with the understanding that you are going to get better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, just like in comedy, we all start out kind of not good.
I was just going to say, it's important to me that I come out, because you both were like, yeah, bad burlesque is really bad. I don't think so. I think that bad comedy is really bad, and it makes me really uncomfortable, deeply uncomfortable. But bad burlesque, I can still enjoy. And which leads me to my question, which is, to what extent can audience horniness make a show more fun? And to what extent can audience horniness ruin a show? From a performer's perspective.
How horned up are you supposed to be?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, seriously. Yeah.
It's just knowing what the line is and you don't cross it. Like, we welcome, you know, hooting and hollering and, you know, take it off or whatever.
Yeah.
But we had a guy, and this was, this is how long ago this was. The show was at La Nuit, back when it was, like, okay to be there.
Yeah.
And there's a guy.
Yeah, remember when they were the problematic theater?
Yeah.
Dude, it's so funny that like you could just replace like three names and the exact same shit with like Lanweed and TNM. Right. Like,
yeah.
It's just fucking. It replicated itself.
Yeah.
Everything just repeats. We're stuck in a cycle.
They booked
this
Dan
is a simulation. Everything's horrible. We're all going to hell.
But at it was a show at Lanweed and this. This woman who I don't think she was even performing. I think she was just the stage kitten, the person who picks up the clothes between the acts. And there was a guy who said pretty loud, like while the MC was talking, he like pointed at her and he says, "I want to fuck that one up the ass."
Ooh,
Jesus!
Husband was standing right next to him.
Oh shit!
How'd that go?
Did he beat his ass?
He was promptly escorted from the premises.
Oh, that's good.
Because
Jeff would be like, "Excuse me, sir." Yeah.
So, but there's a line. You know, when we, even though we're allowing ourselves to be objectified to a point, we're still walking out there commanding a respect.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you show us any kind of disrespect, you'll be asked to leave.
It is so funny when Chris Lane, because sometimes Chris Lane is like, "Oh, this is too much. Never mind. He's a good man. He's never done anything wrong." But sometimes the way he's like, "Yeah, you should objectify them. Scream horrible things." Like, he doesn't really say that, but he's like, "Hoot and holler." And I'm like, yeah, I mean, men will do that when they see naked ladies. I do it too, and I don't even have to. I mean, that's one thing about being a woman is that, like, I'm allowed to hoot and holler and no one's afraid of me.
Right.
Like, I
get so neurotic at that, at Siberia specifically, where it's just like, I'm waiting to go up or whatever, and like a burlesque dancer's coming around with.
And you're just like,
with the tip buck. I'm legit, I'm like, "Yes, ma'am. Good to see you, ma'am."
You're just putting in the dollar with your mouth like a seal.
With
your elbows.
Yeah. I mean, so what is your experience with like interacting with audience members like after a set? You know what I mean? Or like navigating the space where you're still in costume.
Do people come up and try to talk to you when you're still naked?
Yeah.
Or almost naked.
Well, some shows we actually stick around and take pictures after, and we're still like in our costume or just, you know, in our underwear or whatever. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, everybody's fine. They're respectful. They're gracious. They'll say they love the show. They say if it was their first show, they're like, "I've never seen anything like this. I want to go to more shows." You'll get like a couple that are a little like, I haven't been hit on at a show in.
Gives me faith in humanity, honestly.
You'll get like, and I noticed like from women, unfortunately, they'll ask kind of invasive questions. Mm-hmm. Like if another performer has had work done, they'll ask like about the work they got done.
Yeah.
That's shitty.
But for the most part, it's not terrible. I kind of forget that I'm naked sometimes. I'm just so used to it. Mm-hmm. And I forget that, like, if, you know, I'm walking around the tip jar, if I'm taking pictures with people, like, they're not used to being around a naked stranger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be a weird, you know, like, razor's edge to walk on where you're like, what I'm doing is trying to a certain extent to, like, destigmatize this sort of, like, behavior, to be able to, like, flaunt this sort of, like, way of being openly that's still, you know, taboo to a certain extent. But the only way to do that, or like the way that burlesque does that particularly, is you're sort of like entering the space of like society at large and you're like being openly taboo. So it's weird to try and like straddle that line of like, this should be normal. This currently is not normal.
Right.
Yeah.
Now let's try and like figure this out.
Yeah. I think
I don't know how much of it is like necessarily like a conscious, like I'm trying to like destigmatize, you know, bodies and sexuality, and how much is like it's fun to dress up like a silly ass character and take my clothes off.
It's all of that. It's very fluid. But I think the line that we're talking about is consent. It's it's the difference between getting catcalled while I'm walking my dog and getting catcalled while I'm on a stage stripping.
Yeah.
There's an understanding there. And while I was writing for Offbeat, I got to interview Dita Von Teese while I was
writing. Oh, that's cool.
Writing.
For the New Orleans Burlesque Festival?
Well, no, she was here for her own show.
Oh, okay.
This was 2011, I think, I interviewed her. And I did ask her, "Do you ever feel like you're objectified up there?" And she brought up a good point. She's like, I think deep down everybody wants to be objectified at some point. Like, you're
absolutely.
And she brought up, like, you know, when you're in the bedroom with somebody, you're not exactly concerned about their intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, speak for yourself.
Oh, are you a sapiosexual? She's wearing
if
a Batman
If you go
shirt.
Home with someone and they're not reading a book in bed, don't fuck them.
John Waters is still good, but that...
Oh, John Waters is a fucking national treasure.
Yeah, that is like so dumb.
Such an elitist, hilarious...
If they don't have books, don't fuck them. I'm like, not only does Jeff not have books, it's because he doesn't read.
that you fuck him?
No, I'm just saying that, like, some people don't have books and they read. I'm like... Man, I fuck dudes who don't have books and actually don't read. Because you can, like, read other ways. Like, you can go to the library and stuff.
Oh, is that what Jeff does?
No, I'm saying, like, I've fucked dudes who actively are, like, the reason I don't have books, other than, like, weird Bill Maher books from 2007 that someone bought me, is that I don't read. Anyway, we interrupted you again. Sorry.
That's fine. But the idea of, like, you know, deep down, we all want to be desired. We all want to be objectified. We all want to be wanted. And we're just kind of, like, trying to play with the taboos of just wanting to be validated.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have people come up to me after shows saying, I wish I could do this, my answer to them is always, why can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And usually they can't give me an answer. Or if they give me an answer, I just throw, you know, because I have had women tell me, and this breaks my heart, they'll say... Like, oh, maybe if I lose 10 pounds, I can do this. And I'm like, you can do it now. Who says you can't? Who's making this stupid rule that you have to lose 10 pounds first?
What about is your family cool with it?
Nope.
Yeah. Do they know about it?
Yes, they know.
They know, and they're just not cool with it. But they haven't, like, disowned you or anything.
No, of course not.
I wouldn't like it if my cousin, who's 22, was like, I'm going to start taking my... I mean, she has a Finsta, so it's the same. But I'm like, I would be protective because I'd be like, I see the way... Yeah, I'd be protective too, but I think...
I know how protective you are of that cousin, and I'm just going to not... talk to her at the wedding because I feel like you're going to stab someone.
She only has had like one boyfriend and he was terrible to her. Anyway, sorry. I feel like she's a terrible judge of character, so absolutely stay away. No, but anyway,
I'm not like, I won't go into, I mean, even though I'm kind of open about it on Facebook, I won't go into it too much just because it's a lot emotionally, but yeah,
no need to talk about anything that you don't want to talk about.
But most of my family has kind of like just accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that I find some joy from this. And they have been to a show that I was not stripping in. And they said that they were like pleasantly surprised. So like they're okay with burlesque being a thing. I think it's just super weird that their youngest kid is, you know. And I get that. I understand it. It's just, it's...
Are they Christian?
No.
Oh,
they're
really?
They're not Christian. They're not conservative. I use this in my stand-up, but their answer was, they're not Christian. They're not conservative. They're just old-fashioned. My answer is, so is burlesque.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there, to a certain extent, especially, like, parents, like, there is no way that a parent will ever... I mean, for the most part, most parents will never be able to actually view their children as equals, period. Mm-hmm. As people who, like, can take care of themselves. Like, it's just, like, there's some sort of cultural or biological thing that prevents them from being able to see them as people who can take care of themselves. So I think it's pretty natural to be protective in that way. Like, and I think that, like, if this was an older cousin of yours, you wouldn't be...
Yeah.
You wouldn't be...
Yeah, I also... I'm not that protective. I think I'd be fine with it if she did burlesque, actually. I would just be worried about... I wouldn't be as worried about burlesque. I think I was thinking if she was a stripper, because burlesque dancers are in some ways strippers, but strip clubs are different, I think, less safe environments than most bars.
Yeah, you don't have an issue with burlesque. You have an issue with men.
Yeah, I'm afraid of... I know how much I got taken advantage of when I was 22 and wanted to take off my clothes.
Right.
And when I was 22 and didn't want to take off my clothes.
Right.
And so I just am very protective because I think that she trusts people up, but she also doesn't, and she's much more of a homebody than me, so my protection is just sort of like, I think I just need a sister or a child or something. I'm an only child, so my cousin, and my cousin's 9 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew up, she grew up like 3 blocks down from me, so we're close. And I'm protective of her in a way, but she also like, is very open with me about stuff. And I can see why, like when people are like, oh, that's horrible and patriarchal, when people like don't want their younger siblings or like people that they have ever been the older person to, when they don't want them doing something that's like sexual in nature, when they're like, oh, that's patriarchal. I'm like, it kind of is, but I'm also afraid of men. And I think that like, I would never be like, you shouldn't do this, or you shouldn't, you know, post nudes on Instagram, which I don't love. But like, I'm also like, you know what, whatever, you're an adult. Mm-hmm. I just grew up in a different, I mean, 9 years is a long time. Like nine years ago, we didn't post nudes on Instagram.
Right.
Instagram, did it exist? I don't think it existed. I think Instagram came about in like 2012. Anyway,
sounds right.
Yeah. So it's just a different time.
The Mayans predicted it.
But I posted nudes on like MySpace, and it just, anyway.
Well, that, you and Jimmy. I think there's also like the whole thing where like you don't ever want to see a family member in like a sexual environment or position or whatever.
And nudity is not inherently sexual, but burlesque is inherently sexy. Like, yes, I think burlesque, yes, even if you're dressed as Pee Wee Herman, mm-hmm, you know, you're nude. Yeah. Or nude-ish.
Yeah.
So, are you saying Pee Wee Herman himself is not hot?
I mean, I, you know.
He seems like your type, frankly. I know. He doesn't have a car.
Jeff has a car.
I know. Yeah. No. Yeah.
That's funny.
So I'm interested in this distinction between like, or non-distinction between being desired and being objectified, right? Because like, there's no negative connotation to the idea of like wanting to be desired, but like, there's a lot of stigma around the idea of like being down with being objectified. And like, I don't actually have a question. I just like, it's just a weird.
Is there a different
thing that I haven't considered?
I think the issue is like, if anybody were to. When people admit that they want attention, it's frowned upon.
Right.
Like, when I see, this is an issue I see at cons a lot, actually. There's a lot of, like, gatekeeping in the nerd community with all these boys that are so protective of their fandom. They don't want to let these pretty girls in. These pretty girls that they can't have in their minds.
Mm-hmm. To interrupt for a second, it's insane that we have a culture that tells you that it's not okay to want attention, mm-hmm, and to not want to like strive to be the desire of object, but at the same time is like rugged individuality, mm-hmm, and like personal, yeah, success and like
the
drive.
Instagram era.
You gotta have a personal brand, but if you want attention, you're a fucking freak slut. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, she's just doing it for attention. It's like, and yeah, yeah,
who cares?
Yeah, so yeah. What? Going back to the con thing, I see that with cosplay. Like, you'll have these, you know, these assholes saying like, oh, I bet she doesn't know Harley Quinn's blood type. She's just dressed as Harley Quinn for the attention. And right. It's like,
what's Harley Quinn's blood type?
That is a funny example.
Yeah.
I worked at a comic shop for a year, and that's that could be a whole other podcast.
Which comic shop?
BSI out in Metairie.
Oh, damn.
Do you have any like horror stories of dealing with incels at cons and shit, or
just general
on the internet?
Pedophiles and perverts?
I've had a lot of creeps over the years.
Yeah.
They invited me onto a podcast.
Could not resist the luscious hair.
I guess you are temporarily an incel. That's true.
Wait, what?
Oh yeah, you're involutarily celibate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could also just say, you know, faithful. I think it's a nicer way to put that.
Faithful in a long-distance relationship.
Just like a really good guy, and, maybe. Yeah.
You're in a long-distance relationship, so am I.
Yeah.
Where does Izzy live?
Well, she's not there yet, but Vermont. Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess by the time this comes out, she'll be back in Vermont.
My partner's
she's
in Nashville.
At, cartoon school, which is
awesome.
A real place.
She's good at it.
I have a real British girlfriend at cartoon school.
But the, like, a particular example that I have, and I deal with it a lot online, like probably more online than I do at shows, and I hate that I need Facebook, but I do need Facebook because it's the easiest way to connect and to get people to come to whatever shows I'm doing. But anytime, I fuck off, I have fun with it, I'll do memes and I'll post articles and political stuff or whatever, but I will get a handful of people that, you know, will comment on everything I post or make like lewd comments or stuff. And I had this one guy who came to a show a couple of years ago, and same thing, was just being a creep online. So I deleted him, and then he messaged me saying, "Why did you delete me?" And I'm just like, "I'm just going to block you and hope this goes away."
Yeah.
And that weekend, he was at my show.
Oh, my God.
That's got to be so hard that, like,
came up to me after the show and asked, and, like, in person asked me, "Why did you block me?" And that was one time that I felt afraid.
Oh, my God. Was he, did you answer or did you run away?
I kind of gave because as much as I wanted to tell him to fuck off, I also had to, like, get back to my car that night. So I think I just told him that, like, Facebook was being glitchy just to keep him calm.
Honestly, that's probably what he wanted to hear. He probably came to that sentence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think
it's got to be so difficult because I feel like being a, like, fan of burlesque is, like, you have to be so careful to, like, be that kind of person and not just be, like, the worst sort of reply guy, but in real life.
Well, it's that line again, you know, it's just the consent, the comfort level, the respect. And I'm just, you know, you can tell me over and over again that you're, you know, you're socially awkward and, like, that's okay. But if you want to be friends with burlesque performers, if you want to be friends with this group of people who, as much as we do it, we still acknowledge that we're being vulnerable.
Right.
You need to learn how to behave.
Yeah. And also, socially awkward is often used as an excuse for just being shitty.
I'm kind of tired of it.
Yeah. I'm
especially
like,
when
okay
men already have
awkward,
like, social power. It's right. Like, okay, well, you're awkwardly handling a situation that you're in, like, inherently in more control of.
Right. So well, I mean, there are...
There's, like, a bunch of dudes who...
It's,
like,
just misused.
...have less power in society, but still, like, just as a guy...
No, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You but have also, a certain responsibility to, I don't know, not fucking do
has
that.
Has anyone ever been mad at a guy that was actually just socially awkward, though? Like, has anyone ever been mad at a guy that stuttered or asked you a question twice? Or, like, to me, that's socially awkward, but, like, being a creep is not being socially awkward.
Well, that's why something that I think is really common with social anxiety, men and women both, is that, like, there's this attitude of, like, you can't fire me, I quit. So I think that a lot of people who are socially anxious are preemptively assholes because they are anticipating rejection. And when it's men, it's like a whole different ingredient. But I think that, like, the thing that makes sort of the incel entitlement, that fuels the whole incel entitlement thing, is that they, like, I mean, I didn't know that women walked around terrified all the time until I was, like, a teenager. And, like, There were plenty of years where I had no idea, and I was literally raised by women, like, just like my mom and my sister. That's who was around, and I still had no fucking idea.
Yeah,
and, like, it wasn't a lack of curiosity; it was just, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of fucking dorks are just completely oblivious to the power that they have, and so it's really. So they just feel oppressed. Like, they have no idea the power.
I mean, it's, like, it's outdated to a certain extent, but I think it's just sort of, like, shifted into, like, an even more organized and sinister subculture of, like, the, like, fucking incel now. But, like, you look at, like, the Revenge of the Nerds shit, and it's just, like, a rape fantasy for people who are, like, perceived as powerless when, like, all that shows is, like, oh, no, you're not. You're definitely not powerless.
Well, there also was a time that, like, technocrat, like, nerd people didn't kind of rule society, though. Like, I'm not saying they were ever oppressed. I'm just saying, like, there was a time, like, if you're not smart and you're a nerd, you're fucked. Because there are dumb nerds. And, like, those people, even though if you're a man, you're still, like, not oppressed as a man. Like, I'm not saying that they have a right to be the way that they are. I'm just saying not every nerd is Bill Gates. Like, I don't know.
And I feel like now, like, being a nerd isn't, like, at all even defined by what you like. Because I feel like the things that people say are, like, nerd culture are, like, hands down,
corporate,
pop culture.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, fucking, you know.
How have you seen? Because you have identified as a nerd forever, and you've gotten pushback. But how have you seen it change? Do you think it's changed only for men, or do you think it's also changed for women in terms of, like, being able to be nerdy?
I think it's gotten better for women because there was a time where the stuff that's marketed to women today was just it was just assumed that girls didn't like Star Wars, or girls didn't like Star Trek, which is
never
so stupid.
Never seen either.
Star Trek kicks ass.
Yeah.
But so I think there's more female creators. Female women outnumber men in comic sales. Mm-hmm. So that's a good shift that's happening. We're still dealing with the whole nerd gatekeeping crap that I was talking about earlier, but that's, I'm slowly seeing a shift with that as well. So it's,
do men gatekeep other attractive men, or is it only women?
I don't know.
Like,
I'm sure it happens.
If you're like a hot nerd man, like, or other men, like, you fucking Chad.
Right. I'm sure it is, but I haven't spoken to them directly about it. But I think it is getting, like, between the Marvel movies and Comic-Con and all that, I think it is getting bigger. It's becoming more acceptable to like comic books and nobody, and I've heard older nerds be like, man, I used to get bullied so bad, and like these kids have it so easy, and I'm so mad at that it's so mainstream now. And it's like, oh, so you're mad that young nerds don't have to suffer like you did.
Right. No, totally. I mean, like, I'm interested in the idea of like women finding ways into nerd culture despite the sort of antipathy, and like, what is the role of like seeing womanhood represented in nerd culture, like to what extent has representation influenced your entree into it? Because like, I remember one of the big revelations of like representation matters for me was seeing how diverse the fighting game community was relative to the rest of the gaming community. Mm-hmm. And it was just like fighting games by nature, like there's all sorts of different genders and races, mm-hmm. and like whatever are like represented, and like
even like fake races.
Well, I mean, right. I mean, but even like Street Fighter like relied on some incredibly racist tropes, and yet like people of color still got hella into Street Fighter playing those characters.
Wait, you're saying Indian people don't have really stretchy arms?
Right, exactly. But anyway, I'm just curious about like representation and how it did or did not affect your like participation in nerd culture.
I mean, I kind of dove into it. I was experiencing it quietly by myself because I just didn't, you know, I didn't realize how many other people were super into X-Men until I met my best friend in freshman year of high school because I was drawing a picture of Nightcrawler. And then we found these other girls, same thing, who were like closet nerds. And so I kind of grew up and came into being a nerd surrounded by women. Mm-hmm. And I feel very fortunate with that. Well, young girls at the time, but... Mm-hmm. And as I've gotten older, seeing more diversity and more representation just makes my, not to get all gushy or whatever, but it makes my heart sing. Because just being, I know a lot of people who say that comic books or Harry Potter or whatever like save their life. It's important to us.
Yeah.
And so to have that kind of diversity in something that's so important to us is just, you know.
How do you feel about how liberals have clung to Harry Potter for like political metaphors and stuff?
I mean, pretty funny given what J.K. Rowling said recently.
What did she say recently?
She's
fucking up saying hilarious.
She's just off a rocker.
Just kidding, Rowling.
She's like, Jeremy Corbyn is a Slytherin.
She made some comments recently that were pretty transphobic.
Oh shit! Yeah.
So
classic.
They're all doing that. All the 40-plus-year-old feminists are saying dumbass shit about trans people. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for being.
You want to pour some of that in this Corona?
Drink the rest of the Corona, you animal.
It's gone.
No, it's not.
You still have a mouthful.
Where do you think the impulse to like mimic and dress up? And like, just like, yeah, like reproduce something that you love from media that you like. Where do you think that impulse comes from? What's the satisfaction that you get from like resembling, like doing a good job resembling something?
The impulse for me was just because I'm a performer, but also it's just like kind of just a joy, borderline obsession, and the satisfaction usually comes at like a convention when you're walking around and you can't walk 2 feet without somebody stopping to ask you to take your picture. Mm-hmm. My bell is probably my favorite that I bring to conventions. Although Pee Wee was a lot of fun because the first year I did it, I was actually riding around Dragon Con on that fucking tricycle.
That's awesome.
And fun fact, tricycles are not made for 30-year-old women. They're made for children.
Yeah. Wait, so was it like a child's tricycle?
It's a child's tricycle.
I guess, are there other tricycles?
Are there adult tricycles? Yeah.
I mean, if I need one, if somebody's making one. Mm. Hello, listeners. Someone make me an adult tricycle that can collapse and fit in a suitcase.
I feel like Jean could do it.
It's okay.
Cheers.
So sorry.
That's all right.
So
you can sing.
Seeing people's reaction, and it was really funny because my cousin Ember Blaze was dressed up as the scary puppet from the Saw movies, Billy the Puppet.
I didn't realize that was your cousin.
Yeah.
I also don't know her, but fucking New Orleans is small enough to where I've like seen her on like show posters.
She
and
is
shit.
My older cousin. Nobody knows that because she's shorter than I am. But just want to put that out there.
That's
to,
how age works. Just is to like stick if it in her anyone mind. Smaller than yeah. you is younger than you. Like, for example, as someone who's taller than the Six Flags guy, I am older than him.
Yeah, and as someone who is 4'1",
but also she still gets carded everywhere, so good for her.
I just sneezed on your equipment.
I do think anyone who's taller than me, I just feel is older and worth more.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I think it's Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Large Marge.
Oh my god,
that,
yes.
It gave me nightmares forever. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, the trucker and Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
That movie's those movies are great.
That was Large Marge.
Tell him Large Marge sent you.
What's the role of surprise in burlesque? Like, do you feel if someone has seen you do a routine that it's less good for them if they see it a second time? Or
yeah, do you ever like riff out a new tag? Are you like trying to switch up a routine?
My imagination
to be like,
is
oh
limited.
Man, it's only burlesque people in the audience. I gotta at least be loose with it.
You know, because the people, at least my co-stars, they've seen Pee-wee probably 100 times by now, and they still love it every time. Yeah. It's just when you have a special act like that, where you have that magic in 4 minutes, the right facial expressions, the comedy, the surprises, it's... And I think they also, even if people have seen the act already, they feed off of the audience who hasn't seen it yet. Like, there's a part in my Pee-wee act where I have a bag and I pull out the special shoes that he dances in. But after I pull out the shoes, I pull out porn. And at first, he's just like, oh, no, I can't look at this. But then, like, on the last magazine, he actually takes a peek. And
oh, yeah.
That turns him on and he wants to strip. And that's the act.
There's a whole extra layer of perviness because of the actual
yes
what is his name
Paul Rubens.
I mean he was
beaten off in a designated beat off.
Yeah, it was a pornographic theater. He didn't do anything wrong. Paul Rubens did nothing wrong, but he really didn't.
I mean, I feel like getting like mad at Paul Rubens for beating
that on a t-shirt
off.
Paul Rubens did nothing wrong.
I mean, I really think most men who do shitty like sexual
yeah, he's
stuff,
not a sex pest.
No, he's not a sex
he's
pest. He was
a person.
Just jerking off to porn. Like, that's yeah. all that he did, right?
And being fucking honest enough to do it in public.
Yeah.
I mean, well, jerking off in a like porn a, theater, like, if you take
exactly.
your kid to a porn theater, that's on you. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, you can't, I don't think.
No, you can't. But I'm just saying, like, if you go into a pornographic theater and see a dude jerking off, like, I had this tweet that did not do well because it was whatever. One time I passed by under the interstate, I passed by a homeless dude jerking off, and I tweeted, I was like, to be fair, I burst into his fucking front door. Like, you can't, like, if you're in certain areas, it's not traumatizing if you happen upon someone jerking off. It's traumatizing if someone specifically sees you and begins to jerk off.
Dude, if I didn't have access to privacy for like 6 hours, I would be,
yeah.
be in jail.
Yeah,
but anyone who's saying that like if you're in a porno movie and someone's jerking off and you get offended by that, that person is a predator is a fucking liar. I mean,
it's like getting mad at someone like for like shooting their gun and killing someone like during D-Day. It's like this is where this is supposed supposed to happen.
Yeah, it's like very problematic about your grandfather.
Yeah, wow.
Wow.
One of your faves just canceled.
Anyway, so Pee Wee Herman, he just seems like a sex pest. So I think once that happened to him, it was very easy to, yeah, he does seem like he'd be a sex pest, but
yeah,
he's not.
Him and the Blues Clues guy.
I'd fuck him.
Steve.
I'd fuck Steve for
in that haircut or in a post.
Yeah,
Blues
I'd
Clues
do
haircut.
That. I'd do it. Not in that outfit.
Yeah.
But he's fine.
Short answer to your question is like there's I don't know how we got to
I'd fuck
to that to fucking Steve
Mrs.
from
Pepe.
But that's
oh wait, was it it's Mr. Salt and Mrs. Pepper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd fuck just like got like the French
and
thing.
Paprika.
Well, let's keep Paprika out of this.
Get her name out of your mouth.
So I did ask this specifically, but when you were cosplaying there were no old men that seemed creepy about you being Belle?
No.
No.
Just lots of Lots of kids swarming me.
So it's mostly like adults that are into doing it and kids that are into seeing like the same way that they would have.
Yeah, a lot of people bring their kids to conventions. That makes sense. And the, you know, the kids, it's just like, you know, Wonka's factory. Mm-hmm. It's just a bunch of people in the, they're seeing their superheroes, they're seeing Disney princesses.
They're being whisked off being to whisked a dark off. Room and tortured and being made to be four times their size.
When we had Dari Reaven, death penalty abolitionist, on the show, she was like, I fucking hate the, like, what are we going to do with the serial killers question? And then MD immediately asked, what are we going to do with the serial killers? I'm going to do the probably most annoying burlesque question, which is, like, how has sort of publicly being the object of desire affected your romantic relationships or not affected it? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. It's a question that I haven't gotten a whole lot recently, but I used to get it a lot, yeah, like when I was first getting started.
It would be funny if you were like, I never thought of that. I don't know.
What's romance?
Yeah.
And it's fun. I use this bit in my stand-up because one of my sisters used to tell me, he's like, if you keep doing burlesque, you're going to attract men that aren't good for you. And it's like, okay, I've been doing burlesque for a handful of years. I've been attracting men who aren't good for me since I hit puberty.
That's good.
I like
that.
But it's more like, I think it's the same thing with dating any performers. You need somebody who is secure, mm-hmm, because not only, just the whole nudity thing aside, we're busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And were you ever in a serious relationship that wasn't open? You're open, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and that, y'all are long distance.
Yeah.
Were you open before you were long distance?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But like, I'm sure that, does burlesque have anything to do with that, or that's just like a relationship preference?
Just a relationship preference.
Yeah.
But as the only time I had an issue with a partner when I was doing burlesque was actually the first year that we did the Nightmare Before Christmas show, mm-hmm, because he was fine with me dancing, but there was
he was more into Halloween, not into Christmas.
There's a scene in the play where, so I played Oogie Boogie, the villain, mm-hmm, in the show, and Santa was our narrator, but, you know, Santa gets kidnapped, and then the joke with my act was I was quote-unquote torturing Santa by teasing him. Mm-hmm. So I was doing an act with another male performer, mm-hmm, and I wasn't even doing, like, I wasn't touching him, I wasn't, like, grinding on him or anything. It was just the idea that I was dancing for another man.
Right.
And my boyfriend at the time,
I guess,
was in,
I mean,
the
that's
audience.
Good narrative, that's so... then, if he's, like, fully believing it. Right? He's like, you're torturing him with your desire.
Stop edging Santa.
I need that on a t-shirt. But
the only clause is you can't come.
He comes once a year.
That's why he's so red. That's why his cheeks are so red.
Oh, yeah, man.
But my boyfriend at the time, like, threw a fit because there was another man that I was in, like, close proximity with that, mm-hmm, I was dancing for this act, and he just was pissed. He was pissed about it, and it's just like, okay. So, we did wind up breaking up for, like, a bunch of other reasons, but I do remember that was the first time, like, that a partner had a problem with me being a dancer.
I feel like there's a distinction to be made between, like having feelings about it and, like, being an asshole about it.
Right.
Like, yeah. Something that I really love about, like, the culture of polyamory and, like, how it's coming into the mainstream, more or less, is that, like discussion about jealousy as if it's like, mm-hmm, a normal thing that, yeah, you just deal with rather, mm-hmm, than like it being like pathological. Like, I mean, maybe it is pathological and maybe it is like inherently patriarchal, but like the, mm, right. I mean, I don't know. I'm just devil's advocate or whatever. But, I just like that it's like, no, this is just like something that, like, cause fucking monogamous couples could really benefit from being able to fucking talk about jealousy rather,
yeah,
than,
yes,
pretend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I will say that's one thing that I have in this relationship is Jeff is not jealous and I am, and it just makes him happy when I'm jealous, and it makes me happy that he's not.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
it's, I mean, it's insane how well it's worked out, because, mm-hmm, there was no chance of me being in a good relationship. Like, there was no, I cheated. I've always been monogamous, but I've just cheated on everyone except Jeff, because it's just, I cheat when I feel like constrained, mm-hmm. or when I feel like the other person doesn't care if I cheat because they don't like me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So not that that's an excuse, but like last night, I was just thinking of this specifically. There was some guy that was talking to me that was like funny at first, and we were smoking a blunt together.
This would be such a funny way to be like, I cheated on Jeff.
Wait, no, but listen to this. This is hilarious. This is about a dude very casually. So this dude comes up and he's like, you smoke weed? I was like, yeah. I was like, he's like, I'm rolling a blunt. I was like, I have some weed, and we both had like good weed. And so I was like, we were just standing there. Jeff was right here. Mm. We were right by that little fake table at Hi-Ho that's attached to the telephone pole.
This was last night?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeff was right there. He just doesn't, even register when I talk to other men. Mm. And
that like oversized ashtray.
Yeah. And so I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, I just want to say this was so funny to me. I was, we were rolling a blunt, and wait, what else did he say? He was like, fuck. Before he hit on me, he said something funny, and I forgot what it was. God damn it. You're going to have to cut this. I'm so sorry.
No, you're matching on a blunt. Jeff's right over there.
Jeff's
it's outside
right
of
over
Hi-Ho.
There. And he was like, he eventually asked me if I liked walking. Like, he was like, you like walking in the park? I was like, okay, get the fuck out of here, Greg.
Yeah.
But before that, something happened, and I forgot what it was. But it was like,
you like sleeping at
night?
But
I could tell you.
Oh, wait. He was like, I got to get home at 1. I played hooky on my wife last night, and I was like, oh, you were cheating on your wife? Yeah. And then he goes, no. And then he goes, yeah, I was.
Nah, yeah.
Because there have been nights where I slept out because I got too drunk and stayed at a friend's house, so I thought maybe that was it. But he was like, yeah, I played hooky last night. And I was like, oh, you were cheating on your wife. Mm. That's what played hooky means. Yeah. And it was just funny. And then he went into this weird thing about like how men need women to control their finances. And at first it seemed...
I think I've had this guy as an Uber driver.
Yeah. And at first it seemed really like shitty and sexist.
Or is he just like a findom guy?
Well, like... he just thinks that women are better with money. And I was like... I kind of agree. It was like from a patriarchal perspective, but like he kind of was correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Have I told the story about how I...
Eventually, Jeff then, I was in the midst of this conversation. I was trying to get away, and Jeff goes, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and ran away from me for 20 minutes. And I was like, God damn it. I wish I was with someone who was like this much more jealous.
Yeah.
Just someone who would like roll up and be like, hey, I'm the boyfriend. Yeah. Anyway.
You did a good Jeff impression.
Yeah, that's how Jeff
was. Nobody.
No one can see it, but it was me putting my fist in front of my body and moving my shoulders too much.
Yeah, you look like you're skanking, but just from above the waist, which is just how Jeff always is.
Anyway, sorry. But yeah, no, monogamy's stupid. And it's monogamy's stupid. It really is. I do think it's stupid. I just think like you have to basically, if you're not going to be polyamorous, you do have to take all the cues from them of like, communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, it's weird. This is the podcast of horny monogamous. Yeah. This is the horny monogamy podcast. Yeah.
I have to pee really bad.
Oh yeah, let's should we wrap? We've been going for a minute.
We do want to make the mic. I'm sorry, Remy. Did we miss anything?
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Do you have anything you want to plug? This will come out in like maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
I have all the social media crap. I'm Remy D on Facebook, and I'm at RemyD504 on Instagram and Twitter. And I do have a show that I'm producing at the end of the month. I'm doing another fucking Halloween show because there's not enough Halloween shows. Awesome. But it's on August 23rd.
Where? Where is it?
It's in the Twilight Room at the Always Lounge.
Cool. 23rd, Twilight Room, Always Lounge. Remedy, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Peace.